Hey, everybody, just a quick word before we start this week's episode. How would you like to support your favorite podcast by buying an amazing t-shirt or an amazing poster, or by just visiting www.air-raid.net and donating to this fine, fine show? We could really use your help here, people. We need some more equipment for the dining room studios to make things sound better and to make things be better. So why don't you just go to air-raid.net and buy a sweet t-shirt? How's that? All right, enjoy the program. Well, hello and welcome, everyone.
Hope I'm not disturbing you. But,
welcome to the Air Raid Podcast.
The reason you're going to slap away every day.
This is episode 129.
I'm not bumping your fist.
In what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series.
No, I'm just kidding.
I am your host, Aaron Roden.
Whoa, ass ahoy.
And this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Oh, we're back. We're back. We're back from our break. It was a wonderful, wonderful break, and boy, am I having just a very hard time getting back into the swing of things. I'll tell you, I am my own worst enemy, and right now I am making myself crazy, I am making my wife crazy, I'm making my child crazy, all in the name of podcasting. So, I hope you're happy, everybody, for all this free entertainment. Man, I hope your holidays were fantastic. Mine were a little bit subdued this year. I spent most of it sick, so that's not really a good thing, I guess. And I'm still just kind of trying to get over it. Is that just the saddest thing ever? I've spent so much of my life sick and gross feeling. For the last couple months. It's terrible. It's absolutely terrible. But welcome back to the show. I hope your new year finds you well. I hope you enjoyed Christmas and all that good stuff. But we are back. We've got a great show planned for you today. Owen Straw, comedian Owen Straw, will be joining us here shortly. I had a great, great conversation with this guy. We really hit it off when we first met. At the Duncan Trussell Laugh Hole a couple months ago. And he's a very, very funny guy. And he's going on a U.S. tour here pretty soon, which we'll get into in a little bit. And he'll tell you where he's going to be at around the country. And I would really urge you guys to go out and check him out because he is he's very good at what he does. And I love it. I love his style of comedy. And it touches the inner child in me, and I love it. That sounded weird, didn't it? Yeah, that sounded bad. Maybe I'll cut that out. I've got a little issue here. I just went yesterday, got myself a haircut at this place that I've talked about before. I will not mention its name. But it's kind of hit or miss. It's kind of hit or miss with me. And they basically gave me the half Skrillex. Now, when I show up at these places with a new hairstylist or something, you have to be very specific about the type of haircut that you're looking for, right? Without being telling them how to do their job. This is how I fit. This is what's going on in my mind when I go into a place like this. Because I don't want to tell them how to do their job, yet I want to be very specific because I know what looks good on top of my misshapen head, right? So anyway, I get in there and I tell the guy, it's been a month or so since I've had a haircut, and he can tell because it's a little overgrown around the ears and stuff. And I said, I just want to trim. I like the length on top, so please leave the stuff on top. Maybe take a little bit off, trim it up around the ears, trim it up off the back of the head. And so he goes, okay, yeah, what do you guys, what length do you usually go with? And I said, well, I usually, you know, do a 3 or a 4, but let's go with a 4 first and then go from there. And so he's, yeah, no problem, man. He's, of course, this young dude with long, scraggly hair and a beanie on. He looks somewhat similar to the soul singer from Seattle, Alan Stone. He actually looked exactly like Alan Stone. But so he starts in, he brings the clippers to my head, and I'm thinking, okay, I was very specific about what length I wanted everything. Everything's going to be fine. And then all of a sudden, he just fucking rips that thing up my noggin, and it is obviously not a number 4 clipper. It's definitely like a 3 or either a 3 or even a 2 because it is short. And he went all the way up to the top, man. So now I've got this like half Skrillex style haircut where it's long on the very top and shaved all over everywhere else. And it looks weird, man. I look kind of like a pinhead. I have a misshapen head, and it doesn't take too kindly to being exposed. It doesn't. And now I've got to live with this. I've got to live with this until it starts growing out, and it'll probably grow out all weird because I've never had a haircut like this. I don't know how to do anything with it. So last night, I styled my hair. I was going to a birthday party for a friend of mine, Rachel. I wanted to look good. So I'm styling my hair. I thought everything looked good. I woke up this morning and it looked like crap. And so now I'm thinking, boy, what did I hope nobody took a picture of me last night because it probably just looks terrible. Welcome back. Welcome back. Happy New Year, 2013. Seahawks won today. First playoff game that they've won since like 1988. Something like that. Our first playoff game on the road that they've won since 1988. Fantastic game today. It was so good. It was so good. I'm pumped. So in light of that, let's do this. Oh, you know what? One thing before we get into to our first musical break here, I did want to say, go to our website, www.air-raid.net, and order a t-shirt, order a poster. Help us out. We could really use the money right now. Get some new equipment that we sorely need here in Dining Room Studios, or you can just donate to the show, and be a good person and a good listener. We would really appreciate it. And in the fashion of Boxing Day and re-gifting, we're going to include to the next two people who buy T-shirts from our website. We're going to include two, I think they're $20 or $25 gift certificates to the Olive Garden because I don't want to subject myself to that. I'm not saying it's bad or it tastes bad, but man, I've got to get this body under control and I can't be eating at the Olive Garden. So that's why I'm going to give it to you guys. Next two people who buy T-shirts is going to get a gift certificate to the Olive Garden for like $25. I mean, how can you beat that? You spend $15 on a t-shirt, you get $25 or $20 on a gift certificate, and you can have endless breadsticks for as long as you want, as long as you stay seated. So yeah, help us out, will you? And then enjoy some mediocre Italian food on us. How does that sound? Oh, God love my great uncle who gave me that gift. Okay. All right. Also, hey, do us another solid. Go to iTunes, rate and review the show. We've got 99 ratings up there right now. We need some more. We need to break the 100 mark. It's been 2 years, guys. We need some help here. All right. Do that. Okay. We're going to be featuring music today by none other than Iggy Pop. Because Iggy Pop, I happen to know, is one of Owen Straw's favorite singers. So let's do that. This is I Want to Be Your Dog, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with Owen Straw. Stay with us.
you here.
Oh yeah,
so yeah.
How'd it go?
Sat in a green room eating Domino's pizza.
What?
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
That sounds rad. I sat here, and didn't do too much. I think I went to bed at like 10.
Wow.
I felt like a huge loser.
Daddy New Year.
that's for sure, man. But I like we were talking about before. I was watching TV and we saw this, like, there was some sort of concert going on with, like, Lil Wayne. I think it was on, like, ABC or something like that. And he was doing this, and he was singing this song with auto-tune on stage. And it was just, it was horrible. And I couldn't tell if it was just me, like, being, you know, in my 30s and just not getting it, or was it that, you know, using auto-tune on stage with like a live band and in a live setting, it's just not a good idea.
Maybe
thoughts
that plus also I think probably it's New Year's Eve, and I'm guessing a lot of artists phone it in on those performances.
You think so on New Year's Eve?
Yeah, why would they care? Like anyone,
everybody's
sober
drunk
watching it.
That's true. That's a very great point.
I mailed my performance in. I mean, I sent it regular post. It wasn't even express mail or anything. I was like, this will show up in 5 days.
It's just basic.
Yeah, I was like,
USPS.
Well, hopefully this will arrive on time for the set. But if not, no one will notice.
Did you use a forever stamp? I guess that's...
What I did is I like soaked some old stamps off of some envelopes and I re-stamped it.
There you go.
Old school style.
Owen Straw joining me in the dining room studios. If you haven't seen this guy do stand-up yet, go and check it out. Now, we were out back just a second ago, and I was talking to you about how impressed I was with your stand-up routine that you did at the Duncan Trussell laugh hole. A couple months ago?
November, yeah.
Was it November? Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. We were talking a little bit after the show and before that show and we hit it off, right?
I would say so, yeah.
God, I hope so. I hope so. Is this going well so far?
Do you think so?
I think so, yeah.
I found out recently, everyone thinks I'm a jerk.
What, really?
I think everyone thinks I'm a jerk and doesn't tell me.
Now, is that
just... I can't fix being a jerk because no one tells me I'm being a jerk. They just don't talk to me anymore.
Oh, man. Is that like a tortured comedian thing? Maybe...
No, it's actual feedback I get. It's not even like delusional paranoia. It's
like
actual...
what? Who told you that you were being a jerk? And what's the context for this?
Well, it's like I was dating this girl, and like some of her friends know me, and she didn't know me, so she's talking to her friends, and they're all like, "Oh man, he thinks he's hot as shit, and everyone should treat him like hot shit." By the way, can I say shit? On
yeah,
your
yeah,
show?
You okay. can say you can say shit.
Okay.
You can also say you can say fuck, you can say crap.
Okay.
Yeah, but not ass. Just don't say ass.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even if I'm talking about a donkey?
You can, yeah, in the context of a donkey, you can say ass. Yeah.
That was as a kid, it was great to find the loopholes for swear words. It's like, no, I meant a donkey teacher.
I meant a female dog. That was like that was the big one, right? When you found out that the word bitch like meant
even still, it's not nice to call a person a female dog.
No, but you can
still not nice.
Like son of a bitch or something like that, you know, when something goes wrong. You know. It's a
Yeah, I was just talking about my puppy.
I was just talking about the son of my puppy. Yeah, yeah. So where are you from, man?
I grew up in Bremerton, Washington, Northwest, raised.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up over in the Kitsap Peninsula as well.
Oh, the peninsula. What town were you in?
Indianola.
Indianola, right?
Yeah,
by
yeah.
the reservation, yeah.
On the reservation.
Right on the res.
Yeah, yeah. Pretty much. Well,
we used
pretty
to go
much.
There was a band from there when I was in high school, Nurse Diesel.
Nurse Diesel.
You remember Nurse
yeah,
Diesel?
Yeah, dude. They
and
were.
That dude does
yeah.
plesiosaur all over now.
Yeah, JP was in yeah. Nurse Diesel and of JP Industries, I guess.
Okay.
Or JP Inc. or whatever he calls himself now. I don't know if it's plesiosaur
him,
anymore.
But he did plesiosaur. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's the last I heard.
You know, he was good friends with Dave Blood of Dead Milkmen.
I know they were all like pen pals.
Yeah.
No, it was Joe.
Or Joe. Yeah, player. Joe Blood.
And
Joe
I
Blood.
Was and I was jealous of that all these people I knew were pen pals with one of my favorite bands. So I would
know,
write these letters
right?
to
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
I write these like 10-page letters because that was before when I was just like 15 or whatever. And I was like, oh, I love the Dead Milkmen. And I was like, I want to be a pen pal with them too. And I wrote all these long letters to Joe, and he wrote back, and it's like, your letters were interesting. Like, he had to be, see, even like when I'm earnestly trying to be friends with someone, they're like, you're weird. Like, they can't
well,
even,
that's better than being a jerk,
even,
right?
They can't even hide their apprehension in written word.
Well, Joe would like come to Indianola sometimes, and I was always like, asking my buddy Joel, whose big brother was in Nurse Diesel, Paul Cacucci, and I would always ask him, "Is like, would it be weird if I just walked up to JP's house and just knocked on the door and like, you know, introduced myself to Joe? Like, would that be a weird thing?" And he's like, "No, no way, man. He'd probably love it." And so, and I never did. I never could get the stones to go walk up and introduce myself to the guitarist for Dead Milkmen. But Bremerton, Washington, man, what was it like growing up over there for you?
Oh, it's a trashy place. I mean, it's a Navy town, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
A lot of people just like their dad's always gone. So
just sad.
Their dad's always gone, and like they're broke, and it's so. Yeah, it's so close to Seattle. I'll go back there and I'll be like,
yeah.
You guys stayed here?
But you still like, have a lot of friends that live over there?
I know a lot of people. I mean, we haven't kept up as friends. It'd be rude to be like, yeah, I'm friends with this guy. I don't remember his last name.
I'm seeing now why people think you're a total jerk.
Why? Wait, will you tell me?
No. That's just something you got to figure out, man. Yes, that's just something you got to figure out. Yeah, no, I was, and I think, We had this guy D. Simon on the show a couple months ago, and we were talking about, well, I in my monologue I talked about my first strip club experience was in Gorst at Toys Topless.
Me too, and my only one.
Really,
I was like, I don't want to go to one of these again. Gross.
I know that kind of sullied the experience.
But the most exciting part of that, I was 17, and I was
right
in this band with these dirt bags called the Jack Trippers, and they still play over there. And like their girlfriends were like, "You guys better not be going to the strip club tonight." And they were like, "We left." They're like, "We're not going to the strip club." And we left. They're like, "We're going to the strip club."
Toys
just because they think we're not supposed to. And we got the most exciting part about it is we found a pack of Virginia Slims outside
in the parking lot
of Toys Topless.
Were probably just laced with gonorrhea. Why? That was bad. Did you smoke them?
No.
Okay, good.
We got a lap dance with them.
Oh, good. You traded them.
Yeah. Here's the deal.
That's the one thing. It's like you could walk into that place with like beaver pelts. You'd be like, "I will trade. I will trade these pelts.
They could be excellent made. Merkins."
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah. What a dirty place.
Oh, okay, get Gorst. Like, Gorst is the part where everyone in Kitsap could make fun of, right?
Yeah. Even people in Gorst made fun of themselves for living there, right?
Well, it was like when I was a kid, it was like, just blink and you'll miss it.
Yeah.
It was just not even. I don't know why they gave themselves a name.
Yeah, it doesn't really. It's basically like a what is it? How big is Gorst? Would you say?
Oh, like a mile of highway.
Yeah, but it's all underneath like an overpass.
Yeah, they built that overpass, and it's like, is it named after a person, Gorst? And like, do you think that he's proud of his namesake now?
I think it's named after a disease that somebody got at Toys Topless.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that would make more sense, right? Yeah.
Gorst.
Yeah.
You got to get that lanced.
So, hey, one thing that I noticed when I was watching you do your set in November at the Duncan Trussell show was that you had some nerdier material, right?
Certainly some more esoteric. Like you need it for the people who get it. I'm not going to explain all the references, I guess. Maybe. I mean, I grew up a big comic book reader and action figure collector and like everything that doesn't get you laid.
And that still continues to not get you laid.
Well, yeah, I've abandoned such childish things.
Oh man, that's a terrible thing to say.
Well, it's like
that's a terrible thing to say.
I feel like at this point in our lives, when you're in your 30s and you've been following some nerdy thing that just gets recycled over and over, it's not going to be a new, like the new. Oh, there's a new Spider-Man movie. Oh boy.
Okay, I'm glad you said that because this is what I wanted to talk to you about. Is that I went and saw The Hobbit.
Yeah.
On New Year's Day. By myself, by the way, which is sad in itself. But so I go to this movie, and I'm sitting there by myself, and I caught the first couple previews, and every preview before The Hobbit was something that had either been made before, or was based on some sort of comic book or folklore that I knew as a child.
Because
Hansel and Gretel,
those
which
kind
looks
of things,
fucking terrible.
That's because it's public domain. Those things.
Right, yeah.
And it's easy. It's Hollywood is all about reducing risk, so they spend so much money on these movies that they don't want to lose money.
Yeah.
So they have to have a story that is easy to do. They don't want to risk a new story anymore.
But it was every single preview before The Hobbit was something that had been made before.
And The Hobbit had been made before.
But not in a motion picture, though.
Oh, yeah, there's a Russian movie.
Are you serious?
There's a Russian version of
it. Oh, see, that doesn't count.
But, like, and also, that's one of my problems with this whole, like, we're going to make a trilogy about The Hobbit.
That bugs me a little bit. Yeah.
I remember there was an animated movie, and it was like an hour. It told the whole story. You don't need 6 hours. Like, New Zealand isn't that pretty.
Well, you've seen all of it. That was one thing I was wondering while I was watching that movie, is like, how many times have they used this same scenery in the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
And I couldn't even watch all of the Lord of the Rings trilogy, even though I was a kid who read the books. I was just like, oh, yeah, okay. I get it.
You didn't like the Peter Jackson.
I just lost interest.
Really?
I had lost interest. It's just like, I used to be a huge wrestling fan, and then I lost interest because I was like, oh, okay, I understand the formula.
Yeah.
It's never going to deviate from this formula. That was nice. I'll have my memories.
I just read an interesting quote. I think it was by, oh, who was it? Shit. It was something somebody posted. Oh, it was Simon Pegg.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm going to butcher what he said, but he was saying that being a nerd or being a geek, there is, and now I just lost it. Like, I'm not even going to be able to quote it at all. But it was, the gist of it was that being a nerd and being a geek means that you still have a childhood kind of fascination with the unexplained and the extravagant, right? Or the extraordinary.
Certainly. And you right? want to believe that there's more.
And it's a beautiful thing. What he was saying is that it's a beautiful thing. So
yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Well, it's certainly, I think it's great to have creative, but it's just recycling the same ideas, you know?
It's just
recycling the same ideas. How about a new hero for everyone? I don't know.
Like,
I haven't thought it
like Kick-Ass.
Kick-Ass is all right. I like that movie.
That was pretty good, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're making a sequel.
Well, because they have more comic books. It's just just the facts of Hollywood's movie production.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one thing I was thinking when I was sitting there, although I will say there was a preview for Superman and the new Superman movie, the reboot.
Yeah.
And I cried.
I cried. The preview for Superman.
Yes, yes. Is that a bad thing?
Well, it depends on the emotions that cause the tear.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the first thing that made me kind of well up a little bit, is that they show this scene. So it opens up, like the preview opens up, and it's this scene of this guy submerged in water. He's got a beard, and he's just, it basically looks like he's drowning, or that he's drowned, right? And then it shows the scene of like the school bus with these kids that are, you know, it goes off, careens off this ravine and goes into this river, and they're drowning. And then all of a sudden the guy's eyes open, you know, and Superman, it becomes apparent that it's a Superman movie. And the thing that made me kind of well up was that Superman, totally resemble the character of Superman with a beard totally resembled a friend of mine who recently died in a boating accident and drowned in a fishing vessel. So that was the initial like tear jerk that kind of got me. But then as the preview went on and it was more like Superman stuff and it was like super intense and everything like that, I was like, yeah, this looks amazing. I'm gonna go see this in 3D and maybe get a little bit high before I go, you know? And it was just like, it made me, I don't know. It touched a chord in my childhood, my childlike sensibilities.
Because you really liked Superman as a kid.
I loved Superman as a kid.
I was thinking about this today about, like, I realized the reason I liked Batman so much as a kid, because it's just easier to draw a guy in a giant cape.
Like, right, because it hides everything.
Yeah,
right?
You know what I'm going to draw? And like, I was thinking, like, if that's probably my favorite superhero would have been Behind Curtains Man.
Just maybe once in a while you see just a couple fingers like poking out.
Face and then drapes. Behind Curtains Man.
So was Batman your go-to as a kid?
I liked Batman. Well, I grew up with Star Wars came out the year I was born, so I was indoctrinated with Star Wars.
Oh, yeah, yeah. 79? Yeah. Were you
77.
Oh, 77.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, New Hope came out in 77. That's right, that's right, yeah. Okay.
And then I was just into comic books, like the Marvel more than Superman and Batman.
But I was definitely into Marvel.
Just because X-Men was... For me, X-Men, it's like, oh, you could maybe get powers... I still want powers, you know. I still want some kind of powers, and the X-Men was like, "When you get older, maybe you'll have some."
Yeah, you know you know how much time I spent as a child, just flexing my fists, hoping that blades would come out of them.
And then it was revealed that it was surgically put in there, right? Then they tried to retcon it. And they messed with it so much after I quit.
Well,
it
became
comics.
Weapon X. Right?
Yeah.
Didn't he become Weapon X? I don't remember the origin.
It was actually a serial in Marvel Comics Presents, the bi-weekly.
Ah.
And that was Weapon
see,
X.
I wasn't as well-versed in that world when I was a child. I would just read them periodically. You know, I would pick up random ones here and there.
I'd spend all of my allowance on comics when I was
would you really?
11 or 12, yeah.
Well, I got really into collecting them. You know, and The Punisher was a big one for me. I still own Punisher number one.
Yeah, and I got rooked. I got totally swindled on the whole collectability. Because remember how they would put them all in bags and collector cards.
Yeah, with a backboard in it and stuff, yeah.
And so I bought a bunch of, like, X-Force number one.
And
anyone's going to, like, rob Liefeld. Yeah, right.
I remember that because
was a bunch of them in my parents' attic, probably.
I have a huge box of them in our attic right now. But it was like in the early 90s, the comic books kind of came back
late 80s.
Full force.
The 90s.
Yeah, yeah. But it seemed like everybody was like trying to get the first issue of every new comic.
Yeah,
because you didn't know what was going to be like super expensive.
And
they
knew that, and so they would keep on putting out special issues all the time.
Totally.
Like, that's not rare.
Well, anymore. And that was the whole thing with like Superman Doomsday. Remember when that happened? Like they killed Superman. And then they brought him back in like five different characters.
To a Shaquille O'Neal movie.
Yeah. Steel.
Yeah.
Oh man, what a blockbuster that was.
Yeah, well, he could bust some blocks.
That's true. That's true. Very true. So, hey, let's do this. Let's take a musical break, and when we get back, we'll be talking more with Owen Straw, Seattle comedian, who's got some big things coming up, which we'll talk about in just a moment. So stick around for more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Stay with us.
in my torture film. Drive a GTO, I wear a uniform, I line a government loan. I'm worth a million in prizes. Yeah, I'm through with sleeping on the sidewalk. No more beating my brains, no more beating my brains. With liquor and drugs, with liquor and drugs. Well, I'm just a modern guy. Of course I had it in my ear before. Could have lost for life. Could have lost for life. I got lost for life. Got lost for life. Oh, lost for life. Oh, lost for life.
All right, welcome back, everybody. Owen Straw joining me here in the dining room. He did not leave yet.
I didn't even move.
You didn't even get up out of the chair. That was amazing.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Well, welcome back, sir. So let's talk about your comedy a little bit. Why don't you regale us with a comedic tale about how you got started in this whole business.
I always loved stand-up as a kid. I would watch Evening at the Improv. I was super into Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Like, it's funny. I found this old, like, sixth grade yearbook, and it was like, what do you want to be in the future? I was like, richer than Bill Cosby. And that could still happen if Bill Cosby loses all his money.
and becomes white.
And then right before I pay my bills, I might be richer than him. but I always liked to do it, and I entered these student stand-up contests at UW, and I, like, mm-hmm. bombed miserably.
Did you go to UW?
Yeah, yeah. I got a degree in history.
Wow.
Which is worthless. but a lot of comedians have them, and not health insurance. We have a history degree and no health insurance. And then I played in rock and roll bands. I was into punk rock, and I had punk bands. And
you play guitar, right?
Yeah, I play guitar in a few bands no one's ever heard of.
just like me.
Well, what happened is, like, as soon as we'd get ready to put out a record, the record would come out, and the band would break up, like, right after the record came out. So it's like, you can't get any momentum that way. And I started a new band, and we played our first show. And after the show, I was like, to the drummer, it's like, you're great on drums. And the bass player, you're great on bass. And they get to me, it's like, you were funny between songs. And I was like, well, I'm not bringing all this stuff then. I'm just going to go be funny between songs. And that's when I started doing stand-up.
So what was it like getting up there for your first time? Like, after being, because this is something that we talk about a lot on this show. Yeah. Is like, you know, because there's a lot of similarities between musicians and comedians, right? I mean, you're both getting up on stage. You're putting yourself out there. But with musicians, you have something there that can kind of guard you, right?
Certainly, but it wasn't really... I was always performing on stage in some way. Like, I was mm-hmm. in school plays, and I was like...
Oh, so, okay, so you were
playing
doing...
Playing in bands for, like, 10 years before I even started comedy.
So stage fright wasn't a thing for you?
Not so much, but it was more like you have to learn the mechanics of being a stand-up, and that takes a lot longer than you think.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, what did you think when you first started? Did you just think, like, oh, it's going to be great from day one?
No, here's what...
Did you have any delusions
of grandeur? I was pretty pragmatic about it. Yeah. I was like, well, I see a lot of professional comedians that I don't think are funny. So, obviously, that's not a requirement to be a professional. So, I'll just, like, figure out the journeyman path. Okay, like, I just want a job that I think is cool, and I can do my own thing. And it's a pretty autonomous career choice in the way that you get to decide what's in the show, where you perform, how it's performed, but it's also like that. There's no one else to blame when it doesn't go well. So
right. Well, with that said, though, it's like, why not just start being a folk guitarist?
No, but because it's a lot. There's actually a business structure in comedy where you can start working. You don't have to book the shows yourself. You get booked by these bookers who have the venues, and they send you in. They send in different comics every week.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 years in, my buddy Gabriel Rutledge called me. He was like, "Hey, how'd you like to drive way too far for way too little money?" And I was like, "All right." She's like, "All right, we're going to Winnemucca tomorrow."
What?
Winnemucca, Nevada. It's like 12 hours from here. It's a really seedy little casino town in Nevada, and they have a comedy gig there every week, and that was one of my first paid gigs.
How long had you done it before you went out there?
Oh, just under 2 years.
Really? Okay. So you were doing like open mics and stuff.
I would
like
go
that
to Giggles a lot in the U District. Get spots on the weekends there, and I would go to the Underground, Comedy Underground, and do the open mic there.
Yeah.
And I was doing little shows here and there around the Puget Sound.
Yeah, yeah. And then how was the, were you pretty excited to get that gig in Nevada?
Oh, yeah. Well, coming from touring in bands, it was like so amazing. Like, I got my own money, my own room.
Yeah.
I got a meal voucher. And like
a meal voucher?
Yeah, it was like, go to the cafe and you can get whatever you want. And you're like, oh, this is amazing. I don't have to sleep on a floor.
Yeah. You don't have to shove somebody off the bed.
Yeah,
get your spot.
There's no snoring.
Yeah,
because you don't have to listen to anyone else's snoring.
But isn't it kind of is it kind of lonely though?
No. Well, sometimes you'll
unless you're like working with other people and touring with other people, right?
I'm just about to do this big ass tour, my ridiculous winter tour. I call it the ridiculous winter tour because it's really a ridiculous idea for me to like drive across the country in the winter in my 89 Corolla. And because I'm and
you got chains?
Oh, I got chains and
okay,
winter
good.
Tires.
Okay,
and
good.
It's front wheel drive, so at least the driver's side will be.
Yeah, you'll be safe. You'll live.
But the interstates are actually pretty well maintained. I got to give credit to our government for maintaining our interstate.
They do a pretty good job.
And I'm driving. Well, where was I going with this? Do you remember?
I don't know. We were talking about kind of how you
got
started
being lonely
on the road.
Oh, well, maybe I'll get lonely on this trip because I'm driving to New York and back over 6 weeks. But I also have a lot of podcasts to catch up on.
Yeah.
And,
you can listen to this one on repeat.
Oh, yes. And just judge myself. Judge. I have a hard time listening to my own stuff. It's hard. And I'll tape all my sets, and it's hard to listen back to them. It's like, but I've been inspired by Russell Wilson, the Seahawks quarterback.
Oh, yeah?
Who's like, the Seahawks are doing so good this year, and it's because of Russell Wilson. And he's like he goes in and watches film all day. And I'm like, I should at least try to work almost as hard as Russell Wilson.
Yeah, yeah. Try to be as good as the
but he's my inspiration. I'm like, what's Russell Wilson doing right now? He's probably watching tape or doing lifting weights, and I'm just rolling a joint.
Oh man, I'm so excited for that team.
Oh, dude, me and my dad have had season tickets. My dad's had season tickets. I've been going with him since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
And this is more exciting. The energy at the games is more exciting than 2005, even.
Oh, man.
When
we
went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Well, they just seem like such a more solid team right now.
Almost, right? It's almost more because it's surprising that they're good, unlike in 2005 when they're expected to be really good.
Yeah. That's true.
And, like, and it's also because we get to beat all these like legacy NFL teams like the Patriots and the Cowboys and the Packers, and you get to see all their fans be like all cocky at the beginning of the game, and then at the end they're all,
and then just get pounded by Seattle. Give credit where credit is due, people. So you're going on this tour. You're not worried about getting lonely at all.
No, I've usually been a loner my whole life.
Yeah?
I was more of a loner
So you kind of look forward to this?
Head.
Do you look forward to like getting out on the road and just driving?
I almost look forward to like stripping away all the distractions I have in my room, in my house, in my home, where I can just be on the internet all day and this.
Yeah.
And I'll really be, when you drive, you get more time to think. And I enjoy thinking a lot.
Yeah. How do you write? Is that how you, is that a big part of your writing?
I do all different types of things to try to generate material, but mostly it comes from when I'm hanging out with someone and having a good time, and just an idea comes up and I just make note of it, write it down, and then I'll explore it on stage a little fuller.
That's something I need to do more of, is actually like writing stuff down.
Yeah, you got to.
Because I have ideas all the time, you know, stuff. Because sometimes I host things and I've got to have some sort of like, you know, I don't know, some sort of comedy
in any or
funny
thing
you to have say, to, you know?
You have to capture the inspiration in any creative thing. You have to capture the, and you don't know where, so you have to write down, if you have an idea that sparks your interest, you need to capture it before it floats away.
Yeah.
And like, even I read about Jimi Hendrix would do, he'd have a notebook with him all the time for lyrics, and you just think of an idea and write it down, and it would come into a song eventually. Yeah.
Well, see, I'm so freaking lazy, Owen. I mean, I've got this thing on my phone. It's like a, it makes it so easy. I can do these little like post-it notes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm showing this to him for the people at home right now.
He's showing it to me.
Yeah, and I can also do like a voice recording, just a quick voice recording on my phone.
Well, I'll tell you. Well, you got a notebook.
And I don't use it.
You should use a pen and paper. I think there's it engages different areas of the brain.
It definitely does, right? Yeah, I do. And I definitely like use this thing a lot more than I use the electronic device.
Yeah, and I think creative ideas it comes from engaging different areas of your brain that are outside of the normal routine.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
You're smart.
I don't. That's why you say that, and that's, I feel like that's part of my downfall, is people telling me I was smart when I was a kid. They tell me
really?
I was too, they were too like, you're smart. And I thought, well, I'm smart, so I don't have to work hard. And so I would never work hard. And I just read an art, I was reading something on the internet, and then maybe my problem is I read too much stuff on the internet. But
too much WebMD.
No, there was some article about a study where like if you compliment someone for kids for being smart, they'll be lazier than if you compliment them for having a good work ethic. If you say, oh, you worked hard to get a good grade, instead of, oh, you're smart.
Yeah.
And then they think, oh, you have to. It,
like, I don't have to do anything.
And everyone told me I was smart. And especially my parents would tell me I was smart. And like, my mom would say I was probably smarter than her. And then how are you going to listen to someone who told you
that's
that
a
they're
really
not as
good,
smart as you?
That's a really good point.
So I was like, just to defy, I was like, whatever, I know better, I'm smart. And I'm like, just an 8-year old, like an 8-year old, a smart 8-year old is still a dumb adult, you know?
That's true. That's totally true. And a dumb adult from possibly, very possibly from Gorst.
Well, I mean, Bremerton. We were in the nice part of Bremerton.
Right.
Not that.
I wasn't referring to your family. I just made a bad joke. See, if I had written something down and kept notes about the first half of this show, I'd be able to make funny comments about it in the second half.
Done. Yeah, it would be like a regular Herald we'd do. And then it would all spill onto itself, which is what I do every morning.
Oh, that's sad. That's sad, my friend. That's sad.
You know, you gotta clean the chambers.
That's true. So what do you like, we were talking a little bit before about how you got started. You just kind of had this epiphany while playing in bands that you wanted to start doing comedy.
Yeah, well, I realized that was really my passion. I was performing.
Well, and it'd been something always something that you loved too,
yeah,
right?
And that's like, I really wanted to be a wrestler for a long time, and really the part of being a wrestler.
How old were you when you wanted to be a wrestler?
From 8 to 28.
What?
At least. Held out like a, and
that's got to be a joke, right?
No.
What?
Because and I realized that the part of wrestling I like isn't the actual fighting; it's the yelling before and after the match. Because I love like
the theatrics.
Yeah, Hulk Hogan. Like I would just run around doing Hulk Hogan impressions. And I'm like,
yeah,
let me tell you something, brother. Right? Like,
yeah.
And it just get me amped, and I just thought it was the most hilarious. Like, because I knew it was fake, but I just liked the
did you though,
hyperbole.
Well, that's something that I've always wondered, because I feel like I always kind of knew it was fake, and I never got into it. Like, I was never a wrestling fan. I think I may have had some of, like, the wrestling toys when I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, like the WWF. Everybody had, like, a Hulk Hogan action figure or something like that, right?
Well, yeah, yeah.
But I never really equated it to something that was real.
Did you? No, well, when I was a kid, I did get totally worked by the Honky Tonk Man when my dad took us to the WWF at the Tacoma Dome.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Honky Tonk Man's the big bad guy, and he's a cheater, and he looked like Elvis and stuff, and he'd do this Elvis hip shake dance.
Yeah.
And I was like, I was a loud kid, and I would be like, "You are a terrible dancer, Honky Tonk Man," just screaming at the top of my lung. And obviously he heard me, because anytime he would do a move, he would turn right at me and do his little honky tonk dance, and it would just put me into a 10-year-old rage. I'm like, "Ooh, ooh, I hate you, Honky Tonk Man."
It's your high frequency 10-year-old voice that was cutting through the rest of the crowd.
Oh, I was loud. I was loud.
Yeah.
I can create a large volume if necessary.
Oh, man. So your love for theatrics.
I think part of that is, like, I like pulling the wool over the eyes of people. Like, I love Andy Kaufman a lot. I like the whole, like, watching people be confused.
Yeah, yeah. I didn't get that from your set, though. Not to say that you're, you know, like a just kind of an every person's comic.
Certainly.
But, I thought, you know, because I come from a bit more of, like, you know, what's I'm not saying I'm into, like, somebody like Jeff Dunham, where I want to be hit over the head with impressions or something like that. But, you know.
Racist puppets. You know, who doesn't like racist puppets?
Racist puppets.
I love the whole conceit of any ventriloquist is like, I can't believe this puppet saying that.
Yeah, right.
But that's the
right.
conceit for, like, what, 40 years? That's all.
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
The
whole, it hasn't changed.
They haven't thought of a new ventriloquist. And
yeah.
Like, Albert Brooks, like, shot it down in the 70s.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm not. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, I'm not saying that
you have.
You're like a straight blue comic, but I have. You know, I have comedic tendencies, and I like just straight ahead comedy, like something
Richard
Pryor, Eddie Murphy. You know,
I look up to those guys. I look back to the old jokesmiths like Ronnie Dangerfield and Red Fox are two guys I really look up to.
Yeah.
And I just like the game of writing a really tight joke.
Yeah.
And I believe, like, the shorter the joke, the better it is.
Right on. I like that. Yeah. Yeah. So where are you going? What's ahead on this tour?
All right. January 17 to 20, I'll be in Boise. All these dates are on my website, owenstraw.com, but I'll be in Boise for a week.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll be in Colorado Springs, and then I'm at Looney's in Colorado Springs. I'm at the Looney Bin in Little Rock, Arkansas.
God, the names of some of these clubs.
Oh, they're great, aren't they? Isn't it great?
So,
I mean, it really conveys
so
what's going to happen there. It's going to be Looney.
Yeah, yeah.
It just gives comics something to open with. Like, isn't this a dumb name?
Right, right, exactly. So. Yeah, yeah. So, and you're working your way over to New York and then coming back and doing shows all the way back too?
Yeah, I'm trying to, I just set up I'll be in Nashville, I'll be in New York, Pittsburgh, Minnesota, Eau Claire, Wisconsin. There's some, and I'm still trying to figure it out, but.
So go to owenstraw.com.
Yeah, it'll be so fun.
And check it out.
OwenStraw.com is the place to go.
All right, buddy. Hey, thanks a lot for coming here, man. It's been a pleasure talking to you, and I'm glad we could do this.
Awesome, thanks.
Because now you're gonna be moving away from Seattle too, right?
Should
we say that?
Well, probably. I mean, I guess.
Yeah, your plan is to move to New York.
Yeah, but I'll be back for the Seahawks. Because my plan this year, also my goal in this year, is to perform in every city the Seahawks are playing.
Nice.
This next season, 2013, the Super Bowl victory season.
That's a New Year's resolution.
Yeah, that's my goal this year, is to, you know, they already have the schedule, so I'm waiting for the dates, and I'll call the clubs. Atlanta, I'm coming to you. North Carolina, I'm coming to you.
That's fantastic, man. Well, hey, thank you so much for joining me, dude. It's been a real pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Aaron.
And let's have another drink.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right.
Happy New Year.
Tonight.